30,000 years ago, there was a seed that was hidden away in Siberia. And so the proper use of science took that seed that they found and they replanted this 30,000-year-old seed and it grew. And that's how much Earth, you know, remembers. And maybe it's how much we've forgotten, really.
Today on The Sounds of Sand, Indigenous Languages and Encoded Quantum Physics, with Teokasin Ghost Horse, interviewed by Alnor Lada, presented by Science and Non-Duality. If you're ready to explore together, listen in now.
Welcome to Science and Non-Duality.
What is non-duality?
The universal forces.
It's the collective conscious.
Being aware.
Trauma is not the external event that happens. Trauma is the impact of that event, which is the disconnection from ourselves.
That matter is energy. Energy is matter. That's what EMC squared is about.
There's a language without nouns. There is a language without subjugation. There's a language without objectifying.
But if it's recorded, then there is a collapse. But if it's not, then it's the infinite potentiality.
Alnor, are you with us?
Yes,
I am. Yeah.
Oh, beautiful, yeah, beautiful. Yeah. So Alnor, who's been, many of you have seen him already as a host of some of the conversations we had this week, who is a dear friend and an activist and an incredible writer coming from a Sufi lineage. And Alnor introduced us to our next guest. So we asked Alnor to help us introduce Teokasin, and together we'll facilitate the conversation. We'll lead the conversation. Alnor, welcome.
Beautiful, thank you. And thank you to Katie and Kurt. That song is so beautiful. We heard it a few days ago, I think on Wednesday the first time. And yeah, it's just really stayed with me. And so much has stayed with me over the last few days. It's been such a magical ride. And I love that today's theme is birthing. And also bringing Teokasin into the community, who I consider a dear teacher and friend and mentor and elder. And, you know, when I was sending the email for the bio, I had this a kind of sense of doubt, you know. I'm just like, a formal bio for Teokasin that's not a good strategy, you know. It's just like nobody needs the social, you know, we've already heard a lot of social construction of identity when it comes to bios, and Teokasin is so much more than that. So I'll paste his bio, but I feel unworthy to speak it in some ways. And what's funny is we had this email exchange where I asked for the bio, and by mistake, Teokasin was sending a message to somebody else. And we all read it and we thought, that's a very interesting, non-linear, beautiful way to introduce the talk. And I asked Teokasin for permission. I said, can I, your quote-unquote mistake, can I read that instead of your bio? So I'm just going to read you this little blurb that was written. And then I will say something about the constructed identity just to contextualize, but I won't read his bio. So he wrote, I was transfixed on the smells of the air in October and the cool crispness, songs of the birds, rustling trees, and jackboots pounding the earth in the distant fog, as I walk along the road where many must have walked during the times of imbalance. Sometimes my mutterings of a prayer reminded me of those who could not do a full breath, but desperately wanted to say their last prayer, at least out loud. I did not lead, nor did I follow, but walked with the energy as the being of the ancient future now, the Akantu. The earth beings that still live where hope doesn't need to exist because they live in eternity. I close my eyes and there they are within. Peace with earth. So I think that probably says more about Teokasin than his bio, but I will say that he's the host and producer of First Voices Radio, which was First Voices Indigenous Radio. It was the first Indigenous radio station in Turtle Island. It's been going for 28 years now. He's interviewed, I feel, almost everyone of cultural importance in many ways. And he's also a really accomplished musician and ceremonialist, and holds really beautiful gatherings in at the Akantu Institute in upstate New York. So I will paste the formalities, if you will. And I'm just so excited that Maurizio and Zaya are in conversation. And yeah, I just feel already that your ancestors are speaking to each other. And so I'll just allow space for that. So thank you for being in dialogue. And pleasure to be here and be witness.
Thank you, Honor. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it was so beautiful to receive that bio. It was like, wow, that's the most incredible bio I've ever read. We're in tears. Oh my God, this is my... It was so beautiful.
Tio Kessin, are you with us? We haven't seen you yet. I haven't seen your video.
I'm here.
Okay. Yay. Yes. Beautiful. Beautiful. Thank you so much for being here with us today, for your time and willingness to be with us and to be in conversation. When we heard your conversation with Aunor a couple of months ago with Maurizio and Lisa, we were so taken, so mesmerized by your presence. That's all, by your presence and where you were speaking from. Not even, yes, of course the words matter, but the place from which they were coming from was, it really deeply touched my heart. And, you know, this conference has started, was informed by the tradition of Advaita Vedanta, of Advaita in India, so non-dual tradition. And it has evolved immensely in the last 13 years. And when we heard you speak, we were like, he speaks like the sages in India. He speaks very like of non-duality in, not with the same words, but you really point to the same shared being that they have come up to from their own paths and ancestors and practices. So that was something that was very striking in a way for us to witness.
Yeah.
So welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Zaya and Mauricio.
Yes.
Mauricio.
Mauricio.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much, Elnor, for that introduction. And I see some familiar faces on this Hollywood squares for those of us who are old enough to remember the TV way back when. And I thank you for reading that, Elnor. I wanted to say that errant email was actually to a friend who I was with and many others back in 2013. He just recently talked about the memory of meeting with me, and we met for the first time in 2011, and he remembered, and he wanted to send that because we would be getting ready to go to a place called Auschwitz in Birkenau. And what happened was, I had just been on the email with him before I sent one off to you, and I think I pasted and copied it, and I wasn't too sure if that was, and I just didn't remember it. I was just so busy answering all these emails, and he reminded me of that time when I met this man named Bernie Glassman, and we trailed everybody else, and we walked together in the back, and we were talking about nature as it was then, that it could be timeless. And as we know, those death camps in Auschwitz and Birkenau, and Rami reminded me that he had asked me the question. He said that, how does this place feel to you here in Birkenau, in Poland? And I said, you know, back at home in the United States, it feels like this every day for me as a native person. And no one wants to really go there and talk about that presence, but it's viewed differently, not in a way that a lot of Westerners kind of put things in a very binary conscience. And I was reminded that You know, in the Lakota way, we don't really talk about this thing in such a I don't know, gloom and doom way, but it's really a journey for us. And this journey for us doesn't involve involves a lot of praising and grieving at the same time. Now that may not fit the one or the other, but it's right down the middle where you're in balance and focused all the time in that consciousness, to know that it's only a journey. And so we don't talk about it very much, not because of superstition or myth. It's because we are experienced with it, right? We are not trying to gather information. This is what I think. We're not trying to gather the information to have the knowledge to appear as if we were wise. But we do have the experience here in Turtle Island, with Turtle Island before it was the United States or the Western Hemisphere. And I think that's where I'd like to begin and start from, as the older brother and the older sister here within the Western Hemisphere as Native peoples. Yet I cannot speak for all Native peoples, but I can speak from the Black Hills, Hesapa, from where I am, from the Lakota people. Yet I can't speak for the Lakota, as I can't speak for any other Native nation within the Western Hemisphere. And I think that would be too much of a responsibility to pretend that I can. So I'm just one of experience at this age now, and I could include information and knowledge, and I could include some wisdom. But I think more or less I want to learn how to become, how to be more of a human being than I ever have been, right? And this is where I come from, is that I've been shown not to lead. I've been shown not to follow, but I've been shown how to walk, and that's an experience, right? So I'm not going to be salvation pointing or leading anybody out of some misery or to a happy or a heaven. I'm going to keep them on earth, because I think at this time Mother Earth needs to help us understand that she needs us now. Of all the times that we think that we can leave by technology or religion or even science or government, right? And it seems to be people don't want to be here. Of all the times that I want to be here, it's this time, because of what Earth is doing. She's purifying, she's cleansing, preparing and dying, praising and grieving at the same time. And to know that balance of it is to actually, I can spend most of the day outside and thinking I'm listening to the nature, but that's the wrong idea. That's the benevolent side of the human who has not learned how to be the being. In other words, I'm saying if I go to nature, I'm going there to learn how Mother Earth is listening to me. Mother Earth is listening to the humans, to all life, because she does the best job, because she is giving us everything, and she's consistently generous with giving us everything all the time. The food, the air, the water, everything, the fire, everything. She is consistently giving that to us, right? And that doesn't take theory, doesn't take any paper, it doesn't take a book. It takes experience, you out there experiencing, allowing her to experience you, you see? So I think that's part of the non-complexity of being simple with that original communication that is within our DNA, all of us, and not so much a history that begins for the Westerners in 1492 here in the Western Hemisphere. It's thousands and maybe millions of years before our experience as Native people. So I'd like to allow nature, Mother Nature, to bring that within this to begin this dialogue with you all, conversation, to know that in many Native languages in the Western Hemisphere, we have a relational language. Therefore, there cannot be any, there cannot be any word for or concept for domination, which there isn't in my language. No word for domination, no concept for domination. And that's how you are able to talk on the same level with so many beings non-human also, you see? And that's in our languages. And I think that we've all been away from those languages and made ourselves more of a dogmatic human species rather than living with the earth. We've kind of used the earth to get where we are now with progress and the three dogmas of religion and science and government, because they all have a dogma, they all have authority, where the ones with culture have the music of the earth and the art of the earth. And it is those three dogmas that try to keep the art and the music suppressed and dominated, because that's all of our true feeling, because that's what happens in nature. And I think that's part of a little introduction I'd like to send out to everybody. But thank you for inviting me, and we'll see where we go from here. Yeah.
Thank you, Tio Kasim. I heard you say that you see that everything that we receive, everything that is happening is a medicine, can be seen as a medicine. And what do you see? We live in times of deep imbalance, and I don't know if you see it this way. This is my interpretation, you know, where we have extinction of species and climate crisis and coronavirus and all of this happening in our human world, and not only, yeah, and non-human. What is the medicine we're receiving at this time?
Well, that's a good question. Specifically, I think we have to do away with looking for proof, which is coming out of a cause and effect language. In that metaphorical sense of the medicine, there is no cause and effect. There is no cure, but there's a consistent healing that we have to address, because I think if we jump bypass and look for the healing, then we come up with vaccines.
Yes.
Right? Instead of going through the experience of knowing to live with this virus, to understand that, you know, we forgot how to use the medicine of virus. And the way we do that is you have to respect and honor the intelligences and the awareness that has brought to the human species, instead of attacking it and as if it was the enemy and something to be conquered, dominated, so that we're never touched. And by the way, I think that in a sense, we lose our spiritual immunity when we use the dogma, the three dogma that I talked about, because those have to do with, how do I say it, becoming so cerebral that we are no longer in touch or no longer related when we don't feel the earth anymore so much. And so we lose the language, and we tend to move on to the next trend, the next retreat, the next whatever we think the temporary medicine. So when I come to medicine, is that whether we are using it properly or not, because in that old way that I was taught is that everything is medicine. Everything is energy, and if we forget the language of that energy, then we're gonna make it up. We're gonna make up rituals, and we're gonna pretend that it's okay because we're all human, and we're going to share, which is a smorgasbord word, rather than understanding what giving truly is. I think in experiences of nature now, she's giving all she can. But she's still giving, even though she has less and less every day, she's still giving. And that's the generosity. That's the medicine. That's the healing. I think we as humans could be following, in a sense, walking with that type of medicine, is always to be generous, not because of charity, not because you have too much, but because you have less. You know, and then we have to, how do I say, in the languages, in the nations, our languages are primarily of abundance. And we're not talking in lack of, I need, I want, I got to have, I have to possess. So these among the traditional people, this way of lacking everything means that you are always asking for something, and more or less begging or praying for something so your situation is better. And then we forget, because if if we're getting all we want, then we forget to thank. Really, we're not asking in the correct way. The medicine is not there. So, and then when we speak in an abundance language, your prayers become one of only praise. Your prayers become one of thankfulness. Always thanking, and those are the prayers that we center our language around, are ones of abundance and thankfulness that we are still here at all this so-called time that divides. But we also have this awakened sense of being because of what the COVID has brought, the medicine that she has brought, or this little being has brought to us. And it's that we know that we cannot outthink the earth. And we know that because earth does not lie, we must continue the language of truth that she has taught everybody from the beginning. And so if the earth is not lying and our language is from the earth and still understanding the earth, we can't get away from that truth. The more we get away from the earth, the more we manipulate our situations, the political climate, the scientific community, all of those, you know, the government, everything we're still separating. So we're going to be needing more, wanting more, as if we could save the earth. And so we delineate our little fragmented selves into more pieces, because we have been given the program that we can save the earth. Yes, we did partly cause the problem because we forgot how to live with her. And I think that's the toxicity, is that we forgot how to live with her. So you can see in nature, we could say it's dying. There's climate collapse. There's extinct species going extinct. There are humans going extinct. And I say the languages in the Western Hemisphere are the most endangered languages of all. Roberta Menchu Tum, said back in 1996, over 20 some years ago, that peoples in the world are the indigenous within the United States, because that aggression, that extraction, that way of generating economy and supremacy is go outside of it to bring back to it. And yet the keystone thought process is the indigeneity in all of us, because that's how we live with the earth. As you know, Isaiah and Mauricio, I always say peace with earth. And it seems simple, and we always look at it that as if it was a problem to overcome. But it's easier said than done when you can actually you're living with the earth, and we don't look for the fault in others, right? There is a system that has gone unchecked for a long time, and that has helped bring clarity to me about why I'm feeling so damn happy these days, because of what's going on with the earth. She's purifying, she's making herself stronger, she's making consciousness be aware, our consciousness is be aware. And we, luckily, technology, I think we're using this properly as much as we can with when we're having this. And yet, was it the fear that put us in the place? Was it the fear that is a sickness? That sickness is within us, and that's why we can't adjust to it conquering us or the dying of it. So I think one of the prevalencies that I often refer to is are we living with the earth again? Are we living with the earth to know that she has, quote unquote, control? She's at rest doing what she's always done and has been doing and will be doing. And so we want to be in step with her. And the old ones are saying back home, and I have old ones, and I say elders because I talk with them from time to time to set me straight and keep me in rhythm. And the rhythm is that we have been out of rhythm in the Western world for like a long time now, and we're at least a year out of rhythm with nature. And so what we're doing is trying to, you know, either catch up or go ahead or outthink her or outresource her when all of that comes from the earth. And I really, sometimes I'm, I think I'm, if I go into the conceptual mind of the West, I think I'm too fundamental. But when you come to the truth of how we are we going to continue to exist here the way we have been trying to survive, will there only be survivors out of this? And I think ahead, is it going to be technology that saves us? Or are we going to save ourselves away from technology? If I switch the lights off, I switch the electricity off, because somebody has control of all of this, you know, and they can switch it off, then who are we in community? Who are we planting the food that grows us instead of us growing the food? It's growing us, you see? And that intelligence that we are actually dominating is no longer, we don't see it. So it's just us. See, it's still doing its same thing. And it's still growing thoughts as those peoples I know that are closer to the land than even I am. And their language is quiet. So when I speak about the indigenous languages of the Western Hemisphere, these languages are ones that I talk about and have studied, if I could say it that word, but have experienced in translations as much as possible. I had a grandfather who spoke five languages and they're all indigenous languages, and he refused to speak English. So you see there is a language of verbs. There is a language without domination. There is a language without nouns. Without nouns. That's not verbs. There's a language without nouns. There is a language without subjugation. There's a language without objectifying. And you have a language without time. You have a language that doesn't sort of binarily choose one or the other as heretics. And to have the choice to choose, we call it freedom in the Western Hemisphere. But to feel that that we are adjusting to the earth all the time is, wow, I can actually have responsibility because the earth is always supporting you as she is. So in our language, we say tokahe, which means to put others first, and in this case, we put Mother Earth first, and that sort of is a buzz catchphrase for a lot of people who want control in governments, because that's the consciousness of the Earth that those dogmas are trying to keep us away from, is our consciousness with the Earth, because then we realize that we don't have to save the Earth, because the Earth is saving us already, you see. And wow, what comfort is that? This is so incredible that she's still so generous, that she's still giving us what we ask for, right? And what we do need. But it's always that we want more, that we can make a better world, that we can go to a new world. And yet that means we're dissatisfied with this earth that has given us life. I like to maybe stop this part of it, is that I grew up very poor, which is a lot of, you know, go-tos for a lot of Native people, but it wasn't the poverty of the West. It was in the sense that we failed at being poor, if that makes sense, just as much as we fail at being rich as Native people. We don't know how to be rich. We don't know how to be poor, you see, because maybe it's the fact that we have to use our intelligence in order to live. And I think we've been away from that intelligence for such a long time that it everything is in question, and we don't accept any answers from the so-called lower classes of indigenous peoples, the rooted ones with the tree roots consciousness, everything that's underneath the earth is being uploaded now to all of us, regardless if we think that we still have to look up to get downloaded. It's uploading from the earth, and we're listening. Anamakopta, we are listening. The earth is listening to us, right? And we're asking the earth to listen to us, because we don't know yet. And that's, again, those are the three favorite. I don't know. We don't know. We think we know, but we will never know. You see? And that's the mystery that is in part of my life. I can be angry at one moment. I can be so peaceful at another moment. But I realize that's the scope of me, of myself, not understanding the mystery as well, because I'm stuck in the Western world of reactionary, right? But there's other inclusiveness that I have within the way I grew up, is that I'm including all the mistakes, all the medicines of the human, right? Because we all want to, how do you say, it's the being in us. The being in us is not just evolved, but it's there already. We just don't acknowledge it. We don't acknowledge it. We don't recognize it. And most of all, we don't accept it, because we think we can do better, which again is another way of saying that in a lot of the nations, there is no word for better. So, you know, because if we say, I want something better, then somebody's always going to have something better than you. So it's a race. It's a jonesing of the Joneses. And if you are able to work with what little you have, that would be much more than someone who has everything and can do very little. You see, so in that way of balance, that's how I'd like to sort of introduce this. And I had another call the other day, and I thought about just, you know, how much this earth misses us children, we children as human beings. She misses us so much that she's totally trying to get our attention now. But we are diverted and distracted by those dogmas that I talked about earlier. They are totally distracting us. And so we are forced to take less oxygen in by wearing masks. I'm not saying it's wrong that we're accepting this too easily, as much as we're accepting technology, we're accepting the fear that's behind all these dogmas, you see. And that's, I think, a common, I'm not going to use big words. I'm not going to use theory. I'm just going to use the experience that I have living in this society now called America. I know basically it's the love of riches. America means the love of riches. When I become an American, I'm one who loves riches. And I sure don't want that to happen, because that means extracting the base of the earth to explain our survival and rationalizing why we are the dominant species here. And I can go back to nature again. And all of you know that nature has us in balance, because if there's too much of this domination thinking, she's going to take care of it as she does in nature. There's too much of one species, she's going to start culling them back so that there's an imbalance, so that there is a balance again. And I think these simple ways of thinking are actually the foundation of keystone species. And I'll go as far as this, because I like this agreement, but I'm not going to prove to you why you have to agree with me. I'm going to... Because the standard is, because I'm speaking this language, which is foreign to me, I have to call my spiritual side and go into the rational, logic, reasonable side. So I'm actually culling my thought process, and I don't want to do that anymore, because I feel very restricted. And I think by understanding indigenous ways, somehow we all reminded that deep within there is an indigeneity. And I always say that it is possible, if you feel empathy for the earth, then that is all of our seed. We begin to realize that, because I can give you and sound like I'm academic and smart and I have this technique and I'm a scientist. You can have information and knowledge and say that you're wise because of that, but when you go that far, there is the experience of indigenous peoples who can look and see 100,000 plants in the Amazon, where the scientific community can come up with 10,000 uses for these plants. And these folks do not have the Western education, right? And and this reality that we are supposed to explain ourselves within as indigenous peoples will not work, because we've always been outside of the box looking at the box. And I think that's that box is falling apart. And so if we want to talk about dying, I think that's part of the goodness that Earth wants us all to live in that good way with her. Yeah.
Thank you to Cassin for this. And so we talk a lot about trauma now these days. Like, we have the science of trauma or the therapist, and we're learning about intergenerational trauma and how that, and also the original trauma of human beings is really the disconnect from the mother. Really, it goes back to that. That's the where it all started. And I wonder, what is your understanding of trauma and in Lakota language? I know I've heard that there is a word for that. There is a pointer for that. And how have you lived in this field? And do you see it as a field of trauma? And how does one even begin to, healing is maybe even early. We're just learning about that. And one more element to bring to the question, as we're learning more and more about the history of the world, like, we see everywhere so much domination, and the Europeans coming to America, they came with horrendous trauma carrying in their bodies, in their souls, running away and imposing it here on the native, on the First Nation people. And how do we even begin to heal these wounds, in ancestral wounds that we all carry in one way or another?
Well, just from personal experience, and as a people and as peoples of the Western Hemisphere, as I said before, I can't speak for them. I think my personal experience, again, has to do with the trauma that is always present when you remove any species, including human, from their roots, when you uproot them and put them doubts that their DNA is not, that's a separation. And I think this, that separation trauma that we have has been low grade for a long time for Native peoples. And it's sort of this ongoing oppression that we can't be free to go to the traditional places to say our prayers, to gather our spiritual food, to understand the stars in a way that we've been understanding. And this has been interrupted. And this is part of, what people say is we carry the angst within all of us because we forgot who we are. But I would say that Native people, we still know who we are, because we're not trying to define ourselves into what we are. Like, I'm a doctor, I'm a lawyer, this is the role I play. But who we are is actually the consciousness of knowing the land, and we will not destroy the land where we are living with. And that's the ultimate trauma. And you think about, well, there is these Native peoples in South America who are being traumatized consistently now, as we are here. We're whittled down to reservations. Our language is so inclusive that they couldn't include us in America. They put us on reservations. And so even having to acquire that vernacular to convey what can't be conveyed, the feelings of who we are as Native people, into an emotional tact to be psychologized to pieces, right? To say, well, now we are into the COVID and everybody is COVID pandemic fatigued, and we're not really looking into the fatigue. So many angry people out there, constant numbers here and there, people are don't understand what trauma is. But when we go to the nations, yes, we are colonized and we are traumatized again. But I think if you understand, is the secret is not to become numb to the dominator, the oppressor. I mean, we can look at one who smiles at you and treats you nice and gives you the money and gives you the vaccination and gives you the project so that you feel better about leaving the earth. I don't think I'm not saying that. I'm saying the fact that without hope, without the support, without all of, you know, the Western remedies, there is the one healing option left. And as that's getting to know the earth once more, because she's never forgotten you and she still gives to you. And I think that is part of reassessing the psychological backdrop that we've been pretending to think that that's our way out as humans is no, it is the cultural backdrop of the earth that is the actual healing medicine to that trauma, the visions, the dreams she has for us rather than what we have for the earth. You see, and the benevolency is just false that we can do that to the earth is, wait a minute now, let's back up here and really reassess our original tree roots consciousness rather than our grassroots mentality that to change something on the outside, but not within the inside, you see. And so at this point, you know, this is not sort of theory. This is things that you see in action because you're watching the earth do the very complex things that we think we can do with technology. You know, she's still doing that complex miracles, I guess you would call them. And if we forget to watch that, we get to listen, we forget to listen properly, then we're not using the medicine that's given to us. Yeah, so bearing witness a lot to this and knowing by now we can't just keep doing our best. We have to do what's required. And I think that's fundamentalist in its glory, because we have to do what's required now. And Native peoples have always had to do what's required because people try to take hope away from us, right? A system is still doing that and is trying to take, I guess, that feeling of connection or relationship with the earth. So now we're getting into the fear of the trauma. And I said, trauma and fear is really the sickness. It's the being that we're not seeing properly. I think part of this is to know that this being called COVID, which brought a little trauma, is also introducing new awarenesses, new intelligences. And we know, from what I've been told and talking to one elder back home, is that there are 33 new intelligences and awarenesses. But we can't get to them through this language of subjectivity and noun ladenness, which is dogmatic in a sense, and it's mind language rather than heart language. So I think there is that trauma within us that we pretending that we speak heart language when the fear, the trauma is that we never will speak heart language because of our programming. And once that is all controlled, that we constantly look for the healing of who we are. Because at the end of our lives, we get to a point where, what did I do? Who am I? What am I? Our accomplishments, right? If I have accomplishments and I have these degrees and I did this and that project, then look at me. Rather than who are you, you know, did you step on that bug today? Did you thank the water? Did you, you know, thank the fire, the fires? Did you thank the animals? Did you see the bird? Did you thank these beautiful beings, which is that intelligence that is lacking from who we are as human beings now? So, yeah, I think in that way, the trauma, it's always healing, you know, and I feel it. I at one time and still do oftentimes, I have PTSD, right? Post-traumatic stress disorder. And I learned to walk with that and treat it as not a friend or an enemy, but to know that it's present. And that medicine that's been offered to me now is also, it makes you more aware of your space and your relationship, that you get to notice everything in relationship or rational thinking. You don't get to notice everything. You have to be very specific. And yes, we are all humans, but some of us have forgot what it means to be a being with that tree, a being of consciousness with the fire, all those elemental intelligent consciousness that make us up, that we can't live within. We can't live in the fire. We can't live in the water. We can't live in a tree. We can't live in an animal. We can't, you know, we can't live in rocks, but all of those intelligences, consciousness live within us, you see. But look what we think about those so-called intelligences, and look what we're doing to ourselves. So that's the trauma I would like to talk about, not some psychological, you know, I'm going to go to that class and get healed or cure for. It just kind of slows the process down from going straight to the source of this trauma. Yeah.
Yeah, the trauma of separation from the mother, from the, yeah, that is the original trauma of humanity. Yeah, that. Well, this gathering has been centered around the topic of dying and living. And I was wondering if you have some reflections about how do you see that, death, birth, rebirth, life. Again, in the Western culture, talking about linear language and cause and effect and beginning and endings, we have the fear of death. There is a which has separated us from ourselves and from the mother, from nature. What are some of your reflections on that? Or
okay, if people can stay with me. This may take a while, but I'll try, because it takes a lot of words in English to explain what I'm feeling, or at least close to it. So when the people got here, the Westerners got here, the Europeans got here, whoever else came with that dogmatic idea that God is separate and away from us, and therefore we define God. But when they got here, they found that a lot of native nations didn't have a God, so to speak, in that dogmatic fashion. So they banned our way of speaking and thinking and living culturally up until, I think it was 1966, that we couldn't even sit in a circle, because that was power, and not let those indigenous people sit within their power. And so when they came here, they, in this case, they came and found the Lakota people, which is, we are in the geographical center of North America. So we were one of the last peoples who actually be contacted. And that's why we resist. And we are resilient to a society that is still coming at us, in a sense, because it wants our land. And as America is, it wants our land. So when I think about the death and dying, it's like, okay. So I think it was the first death to say that we could define God. How arrogant was it to someone of Lakota to think, how could they define God when that center of the universe is everywhere? Mm-hmm. You know, how could they put God into a noun form and then kind of rationalize later on in verb form? So the Wakan that we used, which says to purity and energy, in a sense, it's to consciously apply mystery to everything. And trying not to solve the mystery will if you try to solve the mystery, that will drive you crazy. And you always look for explanation. But if you accept a mystery in a very aware state, then you understand that we cannot define God, you see. And to us to put it, that sense of benevolence into a book, that or even a religion. So I think I my uncle said there are 220,000 organized religions of the world, and they're all dogmatic, but there's one spirituality, and that's the spirituality of consciousness that they are trying to take us away from by creating dogmatic religions, right? And so this spirituality is one of Earth, and it's the oldest spirituality, is your communication, your consciousness with Earth. That's the oldest spirituality, which can never be religion, because we didn't have any religion or word for it in our languages, let alone have a word for God and say that's a he or even a she, a god or a goddess. You see, who in the world could say that except for people who can't let go of control and domination? So in that sense, I think that's, again, the living and dying is when you put mystery, you consciously apply mystery to everything. Everything is alive. Everything is you. You are everything. Not in the sense that we come, everywhere. You're thinking, your thoughts, your atoms are everywhere, which is true, but yet your sense of what your responsibility is simply to live, learn how to have peace with the earth, not peace on the earth. Because what are we thinking? Domination? Are we thinking living with? You see, and so you will see this, and we'll go constantly go back to the programming of whatever scriptures there are, and we will describe everything. Instead of scribing it, we will describe. We'll take things constantly apart because we want to get to who we are. And again, the trauma, the living and dying is every time we discover something closer to who we are, it makes us live, no matter what age, because spirit has no energy, has no age. That energy is ageless. So when you're in the continuum, when you're Akantu, as Elnor first said, Akantu means earth man, earth being, or earth being, earth woman, earth man, earth being. And to really understand it, it also means something like the being from the ancient future now. And we've always had this. We never said be here now, which is a rage of a lot of people who want to go somewhere and manipulate whatever energy that gives, is the fact that being here now was a perfect place to put Native people, because they cut our history off and you could not be Native anymore. And they cut it in the future that you cannot be, you have to be good Americans, you have to be good citizens, right? But it's the most difficult for a system to try to continue to make us. That means that we won't be good human beings anymore. We will accept all the materialism and dogma and domination very easy. So these are the explanations that that I've talked about a lot and disagreed with. Other indigenous folks have disagreed with me, but it's that acceptance of disagreement that we can go to the extremes and still be able to come together, knowing that this is the beauty of the human species is that there's just not one intelligence, right? Because that there's intelligence that we are bringing to the table, so to speak, from the trees, from the water, from the fire. These are the intelligences, and they're showing us how to live and die by consistently giving, right? And so the giveaway that we have that we forgot has turned into to take away. So we're just taking away. We're taking, what was your takeaway? What is your takeaway? You know, like, what did I package to bring home so that I could feel better about taking things rather than giving your generosity of that energy of spirit, which is ageless again. So I think that the living and dying that we're feeling in either side is because we forget to recognize the medicine that we have with that energy. Yeah.
Thank you, Tio Kassin. I would like to take some questions from the community, but I have one last question that I feel like is very potent for this time, and I would love to, if I could ask it. And it's really, we are also experiencing social crisis, and we hear a lot about racial injustice right now, but we don't hear much from Indigenous voices. What is it? Where you stand in terms of racial injustice? How do you relate to this conversation? Do you relate?
And again, I would want to say that because we made justice into a mental project, into a mental scheme, so we seek justice, human justice, civil rights, all of those mental, and they're all depending on the laws that humans make or make up to control justice in a sense. So when I think about this, where is the truer justice? It is in the consciousness with the earth, and see, we want to we want a way out quickly. We want the answers, how to do something. But you go among the people, the nations. We're not saying how do you do something, right? We're not an instruction manual. Because you can put those books in whatever in a fire and they'll burn, but the knowledge of the fire is retained, the memory of that book being burned and the information that we put on the energy, the energy of the ink into the paper, which came from the earth anyway. So the disconnection that I'm talking about is how do you say this in English now? Let's start this. Ask me the question again, Zaya. Would you ask me that question again?
Yeah. What is when you hear, racial injustice, there is a movement, and where does indigenous voices are in this? How do they relate to this movement conversation? What is the stand take?
Okay. Thank you. Well, okay, I guess I was talking about their way. I was at a gathering outside and there was 85 people. Some were masked and some weren't masked, but some were conspiracy theorists and some were just more or less whatever. And I was the only native there, and it was on Indigenous People's Day. And a lot of other people who wanted to be native, they continue, well, I'm part native this and part native that. But there's no experience as an indigenous person. So I talked about the experience of a native person, and someone asked me the question, well, what do you do? There's so many of us non-natives here. What do you do? I said, no, you're looking at this the wrong way. All these trees that are surrounding us and that those birds and all those bugs, and those are indigenous peoples. You are surrounded by us. What are you going to do about your racism? What are you going to do about your man-made laws to try to control the many of us who are still waiting for you to learn the lesson? And so in that way, there was a lot of silence. And then there was a coming together, because you see not humility, but the humbleness and the sort of the modesty of spirit to say, well, I came here with my PhD. Now I want to go burn it, because that PhD will not apply to how to live with the earth, right? Because that PhD didn't come with instruction manuals. It came more or less to tell you that you couldn't do certain things that inherently our spirits can do if we allow it to. And so the wild or the wilderness within us, the freeness, that's what that means, rather than domesticated. The domestication, which is basically not being free, right? Tame is people are being led the wrong way. We're being distracted by the political and the scientific and the community and the government. We're being distracted. And then we can go outside of the box a little, but when it, and say Black Lives Matter or the indigenous peoples are missing in the picture, and we're going to try to put them back in a box and make it okay for us to go on with the same system. But then is the earth thinking this? Is the earth feeling guilty? Is the earth, does the earth know what sin is? Does the earth apply any of these so-called justices and injustices for us as humans, right? So the intelligence is to again, the balance of who we are is that we understand the wrongs, the wounds. Native people here in the Western Hemisphere, my people, the Lakota, understand this. We have to still live with it. But we see that the grieving process within, especially the Western Hemisphere, is a quick, when you talk about indigenous peoples, it's a quick conversation. And then we kowtow to the one Native people, Native peoples that are giving us what we think they should, that it's comfortable for us, rather than going right to the cause of it. We want to Band-Aid everything so it doesn't hurt so much. So I think that that's what the earth is showing us, to know that those mental games of injustice and racial thing is because we forgot who we are. Children know who they are. They don't have racism. They don't see, that's what I'm saying, is that innocence in every one of us has been forgotten, not because it's tied to guilt, because there is no guilt. That's just some emotional irresponsibility that you've been programmed to think is rectifying the situation, when everything is innocence, because every moment is innocent, and we forgot to acknowledge that, you know, and that makes us equal. And we've been taught that we were better than that, those Mexicans or those indigenous peoples or whatnot. And so I think the energy of imbalance, being in balance, is the so-called new language that's here and present, and we must recognize that mystery of balance.
To me, I mean, I'm so blown away by what you're saying and the way you're saying, and I feel so hurt and humiliated that I cannot hear you in your native language, because I feel that you are making an effort to translate the untranslatable. When we do the Advaita, when we talk about oneness, godness, we know that we cannot use the word, but we try to climb to, and I feel that you have that in your essence, in your word, in the, because it feels that when you talk about the Lakota language, you talk about, you don't talk about the language, you're talking about a way of being. You talk about the expression of oneness, the expression of oneness with every being in nature. And I feel so humbled and frustrated that I cannot hear you in your essence, but I have to hear you through the filter of this language that is not designed to express it and is not yours nor mine. And I feel so, I just want to share this. Every word you say at one, I always feel there is an incredible gem all of a sudden that appears, and I want to stay there and unpack it, but I don't want to continue speaking about. I don't know
Agreed, Mauricio. The inclusiveness, a relationship, because when you're in a relationship, you sense everything. You don't leave anything out. So, you know, in you may sense my anger, you may sense my frustration, just like you, you know, it's like, how do I translate this into, how do I translate a metaphorical quantum physics language into one that has cause and effect and subjective and noun-filled and objectifying and dogmatic and, you know, so I always go back to, look, we were taught our language from the earth, and we still have those stories of how we were taught the language of the earth. Birds don't lie, like I said, trees don't lie, water doesn't lie. And so we have that language, and if we look at it, the language of no lie, right? We can't make it up. We can't make earth up. You know, we go into our own imagination, and as if we the earth is an enemy and struggle, so we have to continually conquer the earth, and yet we don't know how to do that to ourselves. So when I think about the children, they'll agree. They agree. Earth doesn't lie, and they get it like that. We've been sophisticated, you know, think that, well, we're better than this, and we can make bombs, and we can go to the moon, and it's like, wow, what falseness is that when we, well, we're doing this to the earth, our own mother, you know? And so solutions and goal-oriented societies, I think, are looking for a beginning and an ending all the time, back to the drawing board. So when you have people who don't have the accoutrements of education that the Western has, Westerners have, or they're constantly in the know, like in an animal, they are present. They are here. They're not in the future. They're here. And we all have that wealth, all of us, but we've been distracted by languages, by possession, you know, and we go back to, wow, in the original language of Lakota, there was no word for I or me or my or mine or ours. So now what? It's not about you. It's about relationship. So we speak that relational language, and that's how we recognize that maybe we are all one, but we're not going to say we are until we learn how to relate, and not just to humans in that anthropocentric-centered way. We learn how to relate with all life, right? Because all life brought us here. All life to us, right? The midakoe oyasi, E equals MC squared and beyond. That's what I'm talking about. It's just not, you know, it's not a formula, as Einstein put it. It's way beyond this. And that, that the quantum physics of being with the earth, I think, is that formula that's missing, right? Because we have a launching lacking of language to say we don't have enough, and yet we do. We've just been programmed so far, so much, so long away from who we are. We're looking for a quick fix and a bypass, right? And I think Mother Earth is showing us now and will more. And all we worried about as humans is our suffering, not the earth. Because we always say she's going to be here. That's kind of true. But we say in a sense that if she's here, then we're going to be here, which is not true. You see, so we are out of step. We are out of rhythm with the earth and her movements. And even if there was a time calendar such as the Maya, who are so true to that, right? We have to demythologize what we know about Native people. We have to take the indigenous, the colonization given to you. And so that doesn't exist in the original languages, then maybe that's the medicine of being learning how to heal oneself. Instead of being a benevolent, I am a shaman and I can go heal you, you know, like, no, it's, we already know how to do that, right? And I think being around other peoples can do that. I'm out here in the Western world now, in the United States, in America, and I got to know a society. Yeah, I speak its language, I have its education, I know it's mathematics. I know the computer. I've got books I've read and all of that. And I wanted to get what I wanted to understand why we needed all of this when it's so simple. You know, and yes, I did take that route, right? And like I told Brother Elnor, I took my degrees and I burned them. Because they didn't teach me anything. They taught me what I couldn't do. You know, that's all they taught me. And so now I'm in the phase of knowing again. I'm a gathering in a few hours here with peoples around a fire, a simple fire, right? And there's no agenda. And people want to say, well, there's an agenda, but no, the fire doesn't have an agenda. The fire will treat us all in balance, and she'll recognize everyone's energy. And so giving birth to that which we've forgotten, I think we all die. It's a journey. And so when we live again, I do this now so that you may live. You see, is what we say to the earth, is what we say to the creation story, the beings. We could constantly in that. Even when I was asked, and I asked an elder of this about, you know, even domination, I said, what does Lakota mean? And they say, well, it's the people, you know, it's a human being, it's the first. And then he came to side and he said, well, Lakota means asking for the centering of the original instructions. So when we say Lakota, we are always asking to be guided here with knowing how to live with the earth, because obviously as a human species, we haven't learned how to live with the earth. We're still destroying the earth, or at least our ability to live with her. Right. So when I get to that, the ceremony is already in here. I close my eyes and it happens. I look out here and it's very limited. So the ceremony is within here, and it doesn't take meditation to know that. It takes involvement outside of this right angle mentality, right? So that's where I'm at with in my energy right now with you all.
Thank you, Tiokasin. Thank you so much. And we have very few minutes left, so I'm tempted not to go into questions, but if you feel called to share a prayer or...
And I want to apologize to Gary. I jump over and I ask my question instead of... Yeah, I apologize to taking over that. So yes, sorry. So Tiokasin, if you'd like to close, because we have few more minutes, very few minutes.
I like to say that I already said a prayer in my language before I came on. And I'll do it after, but this is so deep that I will not do this right now because I've already done it, and I will do it after. But for us right now, this ceremony of technology that we have experienced is our ceremony, is our prayer. And we bring that into each of our living rooms, into wherever we are, in behind the screen of the black box. And we know that technology is not the answer, but it's the wisdom that we lack with technology. And so when we bring it back to the earth, we understand she has given us everything, and our life changes into abundance. And once we recognize that, every leaf that has fallen here where I live in the Catskill Mountains, every leaf, as I said to Bernie Glassman, as I walked years ago in Birkenau and Auschwitz, every leaf that has fallen and fallen to the ground is a prayer answered. Because she's performed or given herself once again to life by showing us dying. Each season is different. And so I would like to leave that with you in the energy of the prayer that you expected.
Thank you. Thank you, Tiokasin.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here, sharing, a lot of words, but really what stays with me is not the words, is really, again, like I started this, you radiate your experience, your connection, you bring the mother here in this space through your spirit. Yeah. Thank you for that.
Wow, thank you. I you know, if I had a wish, if that's what it was, it would be simply that we give thanks to the earth before anything. That's all. Wow. So 30,000 years ago, there was a seed that was hidden away in Siberia. And so the proper use of science took that seed that they found and they replanted this 30,000-year-old seed and it grew. And that's how much Earth, you know, remembers. And maybe it's how much we've forgotten, really. So when you give, your whole health changes. Like the Earth, she's giving. And so she will always be healthy. And just to know that the lessons are already there. You don't need to find them in a book. Right? They are our experience. So after this, I'm going outside. So thank you so much for being here. And thank you, Elnor, and all the folks, brothers and sisters and relations. So I'm going to take this and I'm going to press that and I'm going to disappear.
The illusion of disappearance, because it goes way beyond this. We know that we have been all touched by each other. Each and everyone in this circle of squares has been touched by your presence and vice versa. So we're still forever connected.
Thank you, Elnor, for the connection and for your presence here.
Thank you, Tiokasin. Thank you.
All right. Okay. You can go now, right?
Yes, you can go.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you to Zaya Maurizio Benazzo from Science and Non-Duality, Elnor Lada, and of course Tiokasin Ghost Horse for today's episode. Thank you for listening to The Sounds of Sand. We invite you to explore more of our talks, dialogues, videos, articles, events, and offerings through our website, scienceandnonduality.com. We would love it if you could leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Google, and Spotify, and share this episode with your family, friends, and all sentient beings. Be well.